Welcome in to another episode of the Patriots Podcast, special playoff edition. I'm Sean, he's JJ.
Hello.
Okay. It's like we all need to catch our breath. They just keep giving us heart attacks.
I know. It's insane. It's like that's how they play football now.
Yeah, it makes me long for the old days, 2014 AFC Championship game, the Deflategate game, where they're up like 45-7 the whole time. It's like, whoo. And the Titans game a week ago, these things are just, they're taking years off our life, the whole region.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind.
So much that, fun, though.
Yeah.
Every time it seems to turn out in our favor.
I like that they're close games. It would just be nice if we were the ones that were in the lead and, like, just had to fend somebody off.
Oh,
like, if we were up by 7 or 10 points. And just like fended them off, and so it was still a good game. You still got an entertaining game, but we were always up instead of being always down.
I prefer to be down.
Yeah, I know. In this situation, it's like,
yeah, just don't blow it. Don't blow it. That's the worst. I hate that.
Pretty much, the Patriots seem to be the only team, probably ever, where you're in the fourth quarter, you're down by 10 or two scores, or however you want to frame it, and it's like the Patriots got you exactly where you want them, exactly where they want you.
Mm-hmm.
They're down. They're almost out, and that's right where they want to be. That's right where they're comfortable. Just a crazy game.
Yeah, there's not many. I'm reminded of Peyton Manning at his absolute peak with the Colts. Like, remember the 4th and 2 that Belichick went for? Like, those Peyton Manning years, you just looked at him on the field, and you were like, he's unstoppable.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about that. But now this is a whole team. This is a defense that rises up in the fourth quarter. Yeah. These are receivers that make insane plays. And it almost doesn't matter who it is.
No.
They just, the next guy up, sure, yeah. What do you need me to do? Oh, spectacular catch, 3 of them in one game? Yeah, sure, whatever you need.
Also,
Danny Amendola playing out of his mind.
Yeah, his best game as a Patriot.
The catch that is going to be forgotten about is, it didn't make that big an impact, but the one over the middle, down inside the red zone, it was inside the 10-yard line, and he dives to catch a ball right off the turf.
Yeah.
Right behind a linebacker. It was like, well, I don't know why Brady even threw that ball, but the ability to make that catch boggles the mind.
It was insane.
That guy's our 4th receiver, if Edelman's healthy. He's our number 4.
Yeah. Well, we didn't really go, well, we didn't really use our number 2 in the game, but you know.
Yeah,
it is what it is.
Hogan really hasn't made an impact the last couple weeks since coming back from his injury, but Cooks played great.
But Cooks had a good game. He had that one big drop, but he made up for it in several plays in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I
was just going to say, this game, does it feel like the Jaguars were the better team?
For a lot of the game, it did.
Yeah.
Definitely for the second and maybe third quarter.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of that Steelers game where I was like, I feel like we're overmatched.
But they figured it's just, it was crazy. Like, they drove down the field immediately. It was like, okay, this is going to be an easy game. They only get a field goal. Then Jacksonville drives down and gets a touchdown. Okay, whatever. And then they get another touchdown. It's like, wow. How the hell is Blake? I mean, Blake Bortles played his... It was the biggest game of the year for him, and he played his best game. So that goes a long way. We said he was trash.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was saying he was trash. It wasn't just us. I mean, I thought it was going to be a blowout. You thought it was going to be definitely not as close as it was.
I said 7-point game.
7-point, okay, and it was 4. I mean, I just didn't think they would score 20. I didn't think they could score 20, especially they did exactly what they needed to with Fournette. Fournette got after us a little earlier, and then they shut that down pretty well in the second half. It was surprising how explosive Jacksonville was and how great their game plan was against us. It's like they did everything they needed to do against us, and they still couldn't win.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week, that what they had to do to win this game, I can't remember if it was on the podcast or outside of it, but they had to get 2 takeaways, the Jaguars did. They needed to have 4 or more sacks on Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they probably needed to possess the ball for like 35 minutes. And they got 3 sacks. They got no takeaways. Let me see their time.
No, they got 1. No, they got a takeaway.
Oh, yeah, Deion Lewis's fumble.
Miles Jack, yeah.
And they possessed the ball for 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And so they played pretty close.
Pretty close.
And the fact that they were able to do as well as they did without constant pressure. This was not one of those games where it was like Brady is always under pressure.
Yeah, he wasn't getting completely killed.
Yeah, it wasn't like that in this game. And that turnover came after they got all their points. They didn't get any points off that.
No, yeah.
So they were able to do all this without like all the extreme measures that I thought they were going to need to do. That's a testament to how good this team was and how good that game plan was.
Yeah, I mean, the first half, what they were doing against us is they were really setting up the play action well and getting separation from their receivers, which we didn't think they had. So, I mean, Fournette, we weren't setting the edge. Fournette was kind of having his way with us in the first half. Then because of that, they were setting up the play action. Bortles was making better throws than I thought he could make. So he was doing that. And, you know, those two, they were just kind of running us down the field, and then their defense was clamping up on us. They were playing us tight coverage. They were doubling Gronk in kind of like a zone-type look where, you know, the linebacker would get him off the line, and then the safety would have him, so he'd kind of be sandwiched between these two players. And that kind of threw us off.
They completely shut down Deion Lewis. That might have been his most ineffective game as a Patriot.
Yeah, he had 9 rushes for 34 yards. I mean, he did nothing in the first half. Not
to
mention
that, how about they kept trying to swing him the ball in the flat, and there was nothing there.
Yeah, they kept trying.
Flat out nothing.
They kept trying to get him the ball. He couldn't. They really made a point that we're taking Gronk away. We're going to take Deion Lewis away. We're going to see what they can do. They really didn't put too much effort into Cooks, and he ended up biting them pretty hard in the butt. And same with Amendola. That's who won us the game.
Yeah, what they did was they paid a lot of attention to Gronkowski in the middle, as you said, keyed on Deion Lewis, and then they played deep coverage. They were just like, all right, Cooks can do a lot of things, but we're not going to let him go deep on us.
Right.
And even that being said, didn't he cause both of those pass interference penalties?
Oh, yeah, they were both on him.
They were both, yeah, he drew both of those. So it was like
2 30-yard plays. So,
and that's not to mention the 100 yards he got of legitimate catches. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing for me with him, and we were talking about it, was those comeback routes that we were talking. They were giving him a huge cushion because they were playing deep, but he was just running like 20-yard comeback routes, which is not the norm.
It's insane that you could have that much time.
Yeah.
For you to run 20 yards up the field, stop, come back a couple yards, and then he throws the ball. It's like, whoa. I mean, obviously, he didn't wait for him to come back a couple yards before he threw the ball. But it's a long developing route, and we were able to get that type of protection up front against a really good defensive pass rush.
Yeah, and we did that multiple. I mean, he had that play. He had 6 receptions. That was probably 5 of the receptions for like 80 or 90 yards. That play over and over again, and Boye was just getting roasted on that because he had a huge cushion.
That was his responsibility. It was don't get beat deep.
Yeah.
That was it, because they were devoting so many resources elsewhere to looking at Deion Lewis and eventually to paying attention to Amendola after they knocked Gronk out of the game. They did this without Gronkowski, without their best weapon.
That's the most surprising thing. So as everyone saw, there was probably, what would you say, 2 minutes, three minutes left probably when we got the ball back. We hadn't done anything. We couldn't do anything. It's not that they were completely shutting us out either. We would get to about midfield, you know, the 40 or 50, we'd get a couple, 2 or 3 first downs and then punt it. 2 or 3 first downs, punt it. And that was kind of how it happened. And there was 1 or 2 3 and outs as well. But then we got the ball back. 3 minutes. Okay, this is Tom Brady time. Start getting rolling. Go to Gronk. Get a couple chunk yard plays. And about the 50, Gronk gets completely popped by, what's his name? Barry Church.
Mm-hmm.
Right over the middle. It was a play. The ball was coming down. Gronk was leaning out to get it. And Church, I mean, I don't think there was intent to knock him out. But
I mean, initially, when I saw the play, I thought there was intent.
Yeah, and I mean, in live, when we first saw it, I was like, what is he doing? You can't do that.
Yeah, because you're sitting there thinking, this guy is a giant, and he's jumping in the air, and you're hitting him at the top. You're hitting him with the crown of your helmet to the side of his helmet. You have to be aiming really high to reach that height. But the more I watched it, he was falling down. He was coming back to the ground, and he was kind of falling forward. And the position Barry Church was in, there's no way he could hit him with his right shoulder, which is what he was leaning with, and not hit him in the head. There was just no way.
Yeah,
he would have had to somehow pivot his body at the very last second. It would have been too much to ask. It was definitely a penalty.
It was a bang-bang play. It was
It was dirty.
Yeah, it was tough to say. I don't think it was dirty, and it's tough to say that if he could have gotten down or not, or, you know, and if he did, would he, you know, it's a lot of things, but it was definitely a dirty play. You hit him right in the head. and Gronk was noticeably out of it.
Yeah.
Pretty concussed. He got up. He didn't kind of know where the hell he was. And Church is, oh, well, whatever. So that happened. That was a big chunk, 15-yard penalty. Then the next play, and I hear contested, a lot of people are mad about it, is Cooks goes up the sideline. A.J. Boye basically runs him out of bounds as the ball's over his head and goes sailing over both their heads, and it's a penalty. Pass interference. I've heard a lot of people say that that shouldn't be pass interference, which is kind of surprising because as soon as I saw it, I go, oh, that's PI, and they threw the flag. I mean, pretty much when, you know, if anyone that's arguing this, a runner has the right to a path to the ball, uninterfered by a defender after 5 yards. That's what it is. You have your space. You get to, I mean, you should have a clear line to that ball, and the guy can cover you as much as he wants. But if he's cutting off the field on you and forces you out of bounds and your hands are on him, and the ball's in the air, they're going to call that every fucking time.
I think that's the key that people are forgetting is Brady threw the ball really early. That was like a 3-step drop, gets there, throws the ball up. Like,
yeah.
The ball was in the air at least 20 yards before, like Brandon Cooks was still in bounds when he threw the ball.
Right.
And so then Boye's got his back to the quarterback. He doesn't know the ball's already in the air, and he's forcing Cooks out of bounds.
Right.
Ball lands in what would have been a catchable area. That's textbook.
Right.
And you didn't look at the ball. You pushed him while the ball was in the air.
Exactly.
Textbook. I mean,
a receiver stopped dead in his tracks, out of bounds, and you had your hands on him, and the ball landed 10 yards from you guys. That's going to get called every time. Some people say it was uncatchable. It's really tough to say if it was uncatchable because Brady put those balls exactly where they needed to all game, you know, in right the bread basket.
If he doesn't get interfered with, that's a catchable ball.
That exactly.
He's at least getting to it.
You can't run a player out of bounds. He has a right to the path to the ball, and the ball is in the air, and people saying, you know, they're going to call that every time. And, you know, it gets me a little annoyed. It's like, you know, we've seen this over and over again. These things get called. It's not like, you know, I mean, you can say all you want that the Patriots get this, that, the other thing, but it's a matter of, you know, you can't do that. Because the defensive player is not aware of something doesn't mean that the Patriots get the call. No, the defensive player needs to know about that. And Boye was complaining about that, saying, you know, oh, I didn't know. I mean, he did say...
he came back and said he's got to check the rule book.
He's got to check. Exactly. He said he did come back and say the right thing, which was good of him. But it's, you know, all these people that say, oh, classic Patriots, they getting away with a call. It's a favor call because Gronk got hit. You can say whatever you want. I mean, if that got called against us, I'd say, Jesus Christ, what the hell is the cornerback doing? You can't fucking do that.
Yeah, exactly. And it has been called on players on our team this year.
Yeah.
Similar type plays, yeah. Maybe exactly. Not forcing them out of bounds, but you got your back to the ball and you're pushing the guy.
Right.
Can't have it.
Boye's saying, oh, well, we were both touching each other. Yeah, but it's the fact that you ran the guy out of bounds while you were touching him.
And he was looking for the ball and you were not.
Exactly. I mean, that's quintessential no-no. You can't do that. So anyways, that puts us right on the ball on like the 10 or something. We score, get 7. So now it's much
more. Wait. I want to talk about that play for a second. There was after the pass interference, Cookie runs a little in route. We get the ball with 1 minute to go, like a minute 15
at the
1 yard line. Mm-hmm. First down and goal. And we just walk in with a James White handoff to the left. I was rewatching that play. We ran it to the left side. We had Solder, and next to him was Danny Amendola. Amendola blocks the cornerback. Solder doesn't block anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody. How is there nobody near the tackle?
Well,
at the goal line.
Right.
That was like incredibly poor coaching. They had 2 timeouts. They could have taken their time, and they were completely discombobulated. They totally gave up on the play. Miles Jack tackles James White 5 yards deep in the end zone, slams him to the ground. Definitely could have been a penalty.
Yeah.
Almost gets into a scrum. That's where there's that picture of the ref laughing was after breaking that up.
Yeah. They didn't call that one.
Well, I'm just saying it's inexcusable for the defense to not be set and the coaching staff to allow them to not be set with a minute to go, first and goal situation with 2 timeouts.
Well, there was a theme of that throughout the game, especially in the second half, of them just breaking down.
Yeah, as good as their game plan was, you could see the coaching deficiencies in game.
100%. I mean, I kept yelling it because we were getting to the moment that they were unraveling, and they were. I mean, they had a 3-and-out right before that. Then they caused those 2 penalties, and people were pissed. And it's almost like when they got kind of mad about something that they fell apart.
Yeah, it affected their play.
It affected. They go, oh, well, we don't think, you know, that was a questionable call. And then, okay, the next play they just stopped playing. And that's not the only time it happened in the game. And then right after that, so we do score with the James White touchdown. And then right after that, they have about a minute left. They have a couple timeouts, and they kneel the ball.
Yep, that was it.
They kneeled the ball.
Well, did you hear what Marone said about it? He goes, it's a risk-reward decision. And they don't trust their quarterback. It's
that's
a
what
risk.
It is. Exactly.
That's totally it.
That's what
and
it was.
Should they? Really, should they?
Not that good. No, but I mean, at that point, he was still, he had that confidence to him still.
Yes, but he was making plays. He was making plays off play action.
Right.
He was making.
In that situation, there is no play action.
Yeah, you don't have that luxury.
So you are correct.
He's going to be looking at full pass rush, everyone jumping routes. Mm-hmm. That's a tough situation. I think that was actually a good move by them.
I mean,
easy to second guess.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, run the ball, something. I don't know. Just come up there and kneel it.
Fournette was playing very well in the first half. I would have just fed him.
Right.
At least once, if not twice.
See what happens. I mean, if the guy gets 20 or 30 yards, you're pretty close to friggin' field goal range at this point.
I know. I would have handed it off to Fournette up the middle, and then I would have done a jet sweep to Corey Grant. Corey Grant was ruining us in the first half.
Was he?
Yeah, he's the little running back who they threw a couple of tight screens to.
Yep.
Fast dude. He ran like a 4.3 wheels. So,
yeah, exactly. So that happened. Now it's so they kneel the ball. It's 14-10, much more manageable game. Not what we expected, but I mean, we both did say last week, you know, this is a second half Patriots team. This is a team that they're going to let you stick around in the first half, and the second half they're going to blow you out. And that's essentially what happened. Come out in the second half, Jacksonville gets the ball. I want to say, did they score a field goal immediately?
Yeah, first drive, they got a field goal.
So they drove on us. They scored a field goal. Now it's, oh, God, they scored again. Now it's 17-10. Jesus Christ, are we going to be able to do this? The whole third quarter, New England's offense couldn't get going. Couldn't do it. Now they'd get some first downs, but they couldn't materialize, make it any point.
Yeah, and part of that is adjusting to life without Gronk.
Yeah, exactly.
That was their first drive without, her first couple series without Gronk. So they got to figure out how are they now defending who's left on the field. Because obviously they were paying incredible amount of attention to Gronkowski in the first half, and now
right. You
remove that chess piece, and is Amendola getting doubled? Is Cookie getting doubled? Are they sending a fifth pass rusher? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of that was feeling that out and figuring out where they were going to be able to attack in the fourth quarter. But yeah, they gave up the field goal initially, another field goal at the it was actually
beginning of the fourth.
The very beginning. It was like 8 seconds into the fourth quarter or something. And then we get the ball back down 10 points in the fourth quarter after not being able to do essentially anything offensively. The only substantial drive we had was the opener and the one with all the penalties. And so now they get into panic mode, and we throw the ball to Amendola. And then you look over, and Amendola's throwing the ball over to Deion Lewis.
Yeah.
And it looks incredible. He's got like three, I think he had like
three blockers. Three blockers.
And three blockers. He starts veering inside. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I hope that he was trying to set up a block in front of it that we couldn't see with the angle on the TV.
Yeah.
But never felt Miles Jack, and he makes a great play. And I think they got the call right. I think they screwed up and the whistle was too early.
That's tough to say.
But if they marked him down and then they had to review it, I'm not sure they would have reversed it and say he fumbled. I'm not sure.
I don't think they would have, because we were talking. I mean, they showed that play so many times. As he lost the ball, he did regain control for a second.
Or he made it stop. The ball stopped moving.
It looked like he regained control, and then he fell to the ground. And then Jack got the ball, and it's you know, this is another controversial one. But I mean, before he even did that, I was pissed at the guy on the right, whoever was the right blocker. I can't remember who it was. Should have fucking picked up Jack, because he saw him coming. Jack was coming at a good angle. And it was just like, why didn't you fucking block him? But
Deion should have saw him.
And ran around or something.
Or he should have just stayed at the sideline.
Yeah.
Where everyone else was there to protect him.
Exactly.
But huge play from Miles Jack, played great, right?
At least in that play. I mean, I thought he played pretty good.
I thought he played pretty darn good. And then he got hurt pretty bad at the end of it.
Yeah.
But that was
a huge play.
That was a massive play. Potentially, you're talking about getting into field goal range there on that one play.
And, yeah,
that turns, and this is where it seemed to all turn around for the Pats defense.
Mm-hmm.
Pats defense was getting kind of beat up by the Jags offense, getting run on, converting,
not setting
third
the
downs.
Edge, all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
James Harrison did not set the edge on one play, and I want to scream in his face. Never would ever
in the
do
first
that,
half.
James. Never
in
ever.
The first
in the first half. Yeah, but then in the fourth quarter, when they absolutely had to have it. Three and out. gave up one first down, three and out, and then the last drive of the game where they get the turnover on downs. Yeah. They were lights out in the fourth quarter. The defense was. Absolutely. And that's something everyone wants to talk about Brady. We haven't even brought up his hand.
No.
But everyone wants to talk about Brady in a comeback like this, and they forget that the defense put the clamp down in the fourth quarter when we absolutely had to have it.
Absolutely. Yeah. But before we jump to the very ending, I want to talk a little bit more about that Jack play because a lot of people are up in arms about that. And it's like, you know, here we go, the Patriots got away with one of the Patriots. We see that play all the time where it's a bang-bang play. You don't know really what happened. Nobody knows what happened. They call the whistle dead. All the time.
All the time.
All the fucking time. And people say, oh, well, he wasn't touched. Yeah, well, when you look at it in super slow motion, you can see by the time that Jack had absolute complete possession, he didn't get touched. But it's like, well, you could have said he gained possession as soon as he grabbed the ball when he was still touching Deion. And I mean, that stuff. I saw an article in the process of going to the ground. Yeah, the whole friggin' thing. And it's like, you know, that play on the field happened in less than a second. It's like they clocked it at like 0.91 seconds or something. And people are freaking out about it. It's like, what do you think they're going to fucking do? They're going to let him run for a touchdown? You think that would even stand? At that point, you think they're going to give you the ball still? I mean, that could change fucking all kinds of things. So it's not going to change all kinds of things, but it's like, you really think that that's what they're going to fucking do? I mean,
that's a lot to ask from an official.
Exactly. I mean, they didn't even know if they had the ball yet.
Yeah.
And then they realized, oh, you're right. Yeah, they do have the ball. Okay. And then they went to review it. Okay, they definitely have the ball. They did get
it. No, they didn't. They did not say definitely. They said the play stood. They did not say confirm.
You're correct. So, I mean, that kind of pissed me off that people are freaking out about that. And the Jack.
All these things are explainable. It's understandable. You could be sick and tired of seeing the Patriots in these situations winning close games like this. Totally understandable. And you're going to nitpick a lot of little things that if this happened, then, you know, if that happened, then things would be different.
And the best part about it is the Jacksonville Jaguars had plenty of opportunities to win that game.
So many.
Like you just said, they went, what, three and outs? Or not three and outs, but like one first down or a couple
there was first one, downs. They had one first down in three drives before that final drive in the fourth quarter.
So here comes Tom Brady. So I don't think we scored immediately, but we played a very patient field. What is it?
Field position
game.
Yeah.
Like we had the ball on the 40 or 50 and we kept punting it and putting them back.
Well, no, we scored on the very next possession.
Okay.
So Miles Jack recovers. We force a three and out. And that three and out was capped by Devin McCourty making a hit 1 yard before the first down marker on a third down. You remember that play?
Yep.
Terrific play by McCourty. Definitely his best play of the game. We get the ball back at our own 15-yard line. Kind of tough, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just slowly go backwards initially. Mm-hmm. We're at third and 18. Well, we got a first down on a pass to Cookie. And then Brady gets sacked. Incomplete pass. Third and 18. Third and 18.
We're
10 minutes to go. Down 10 points in the fourth quarter. Tough spot to be. Everyone knows this. Brady, masterful. Drops back in the shotgun. Opens his whole body left. And you watch the defense. There's this great view you can see on some of the highlight videos from the end zone. And you see the linebacker, I believe it was Miles Jack, just completely vacate the middle of the field. Brady drops back. His shoulders are, you know, like kind of pointed downfield. And then he opens up like he's looking to the left side of the field. Miles Jack runs away. And for whatever reason, Telvin Smith on the backside stays wide. So it opens up the middle. Amendola curls right into it. Brady snaps his shoulders back, drops one right where it needs to be.
Yeah, Romo was freaking out about that.
Championship plays. That is a championship caliber play.
100%.
That was
unbelievable.
Incredible play by Brady. Continue to drive down the field. This is when you get Amendola with the crosser. Shallow crosser for the touchdown, which was from like the 10-yard line or something.
Mm-hmm.
Down 3 points. Kickoff to the Jaguars. They got one first down, end up punting. This is where we start getting into the field field position. So now we're down 3 points with 6 minutes to go. And you think, oh, is this four down territory? How are we going to do this? We're able to get out to midfield. This was on the Jalen Ramsey when he horse cut or, you know, he like clotheslined Cookie with the ball in the air.
Yeah.
That was the big pass interference. So that gets us out to the 50, and everything just stalls from there. Getting to a 4th and 10 from the Jacksonville 45, punt it. This is another one of the very underrated parts of this game. Ryan Allen punted inside the 10-yard line a handful
multiple times,
like at least 3 times, and several in the fourth or in the second half, late in the second half. And this was one of them. Kicks it down to the 10-yard line. Jaguars immediately go 3 and out. They were terrified. They were so conservative in the fourth quarter.
And it's not. It's funny what the Patriots defense was doing. We were doing like jailbreak blitzes. We were blitzing from everywhere and leaving guys wide open downfield. There was a couple guys deep, literally wide open, and Bortles just shit himself. He saw that many people in his face. He didn't know what to do, and then he was done.
That's the difference. Eye level came down.
And that's exactly what he did. Oh, that's what all they kept doing. They kept blitzing and blitzing and blitzing. If they got in any situation where they weren't sure what they were going to do, they were going to blitz. And there were guys over the top wide. And even he would throw at some of them. And there were guys that, you know, they had a step or two on some of our players, and he would just completely miss them. That was the Blake that we all expected.
Yeah, we saw a lot of that. I know you said earlier that Blake had, he played really well, and he did. He played great for him.
Oh, for him, it was incredible.
He missed a lot of throws. There was, I mean, all the way back to the first quarter when Fournette's running the wheel route out of the backfield, and he throws it way short. Van Noy swats it away.
Yeah.
A bunch of the crossers, even if sometimes they caught it, Marquise Lee converted a third down on one he caught, but he had to stretch all the way behind him. Definitely cost him like 10 yards and yak.
Mm-hmm.
Several other crossers he threw behind the guy, and they were able to swat it down. So he definitely missed throws, and he missed reads too. And that's really what came into play in the fourth quarter, was missing reads.
Yeah.
Eye level came down, panic, throw to the flats, and the flats were covered. So this, we forced out that the punt from their 10-yard line, and this is where their punter wasn't able to step up. Kicks a 40-yard punt versus when he could probably usually get a 50-yard punt, and he usually gets hang time. This time, leaves it nice and low. Amendola's got all kinds of space, returns it to the left, inside field goal range. We're down 3. Now we're thinking, oh, shit, we're in a good spot here.
Yeah.
Got the ball just inside 5 minutes, and I mean, I think everybody watching the game, Patriot fan, Jaguar fan, neutral guy, they all knew it was going to be a touchdown.
Yeah. Here we go. Here we fucking go. Exactly. We get into a third down. I think it was third down.
No, second.
It was second. Flea flicker.
Oh.
That's what I'm talking about. Was that earlier?
Yeah. That was the drive before.
Yeah, the flea. I thought that was great. And then go to Dorsett. Look for the deep ball. No, not open. Throw it a covered Dorsett. Put it only where he can get it. Converts a third down.
That was the drive after the trick play to Deion Lewis.
Yeah.
They came right back and they're like, screw it, we're doing it.
We're emptying out the bag.
Yeah, that was the play after Amendola's 3rd and 18 conversion.
Mm-hmm. That was great.
Good play. So Dorsett played 3 plays all game, and that was one of them.
Yeah.
Easily his best catch as a Patriot.
1 for 31.
Good for him. I wonder what Brady's passer rating was throwing to Philip Dorsett. So on this possession, keep going to Amendola and just keep slowly matriculating down the field. And then finally, he cashes in on an incredible touchdown pass or catch, really. Goes up, catches it like 9 feet in the air.
Little Amendola.
Little Amendola. And then totally falling out of the end zone.
Gets
is able to
in.
Slap his second foot in.
Unbelievable.
Kind of reminiscent of the, he had a touchdown catch against the Seahawks in the
like
Super
that.
Bowl.
Yep. Very similar. Very similar.
But, back that was the an easier zone. Catch than this one was.
Now, the biggest thing to me, and it's so funny, it always seems to happen with the Patriots, is this defense that had stifled us for so long was absolutely gassed in the fourth quarter.
How does that happen? Because the Pats defense was on the field all game, and they weren't gassed.
They were exhausted.
Yeah.
You remember? So literally on that last drive, right before we scored with Amendola, one Miles Jack went out, and then another guy went out. On almost consecutive plays, within a few plays of each other. Both
I think
went
they
out.
Were consecutive plays.
I think they were too. And Miles Jack looked hurt. He got carted off the field. The other guy, I don't know what his injury was, but at a certain point, we were sitting there going, you know, one of these guys isn't hurt.
Are they stalling? Yeah.
Are they stalling?
I think they were both hurt.
They might have both been, but you could see the players were like, thank God, because they were all like hunched over, breathing heavy. I mean, On the play earlier, what we talked about, where Cooks went down the sidelines and
Jalen Ramsey
hit him. He was exhausted. Jalen grabbed him because he couldn't run anymore. Literally, what it was. It was crazy.
How does this happen?
I have no idea. And it happens with all of them. And it happened with the, it was the same thing with Atlanta in the Super Bowl last year. It was the same thing with the Seahawks in 2014.
Titans the week before.
The Titans the week before. They were exhausted. And it just, I don't know what, Belichick, he makes them all run those fucking hills or something. He, we all know he makes them do it. And it's like.
There's something in those water bottles, I'll tell you.
You think so? Yeah. don't say that. Everyone will
freak out. I just started a new conspiracy.
Yeah. It's just he's conditioning these guys to a point where, you know, our offensive line played amazing in the fourth quarter.
I think it's probably easier to pass protect than to pass rush.
Oh, it is. But at a certain point, I mean, it looked like our offensive line had just stepped out on the field for the beginning of the game, and their defensive line couldn't do anything.
Yeah, but running routes versus covering guys, those are pretty similar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it looked like we just got fucking going. We could have played a whole nother goddamn quarter.
I know, and what's so weird about that is, as I just said, the Jaguars were on offense for the majority of the first three quarters.
Most of the fucking game.
Yeah, you would have thought their defense would have more in the tank in the fourth quarter than our defense would.
Yeah, and it was just
But ridiculous. They did a total flip. Their defense was great quarters 1 through 3. Ours was terrible 1 through 3, and they flipped in the fourth quarter.
And that's all that mattered.
That's the difference.
So they were completely gassed. Absolutely gassed. We score a touchdown. Now they have exactly what where they need to be. They have like 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes left. Got more, what, two timeouts?
They had enough timeouts.
Few timeouts. They start driving. They make a couple decent plays, and then we go right back to the blitzes. Bring them to they got the delay of game, or was that earlier?
I think that was way earlier.
That was early, which was a terrible penalty.
Oh my God, terrible. Coming out of a timeout, they got a delay of game.
Yeah, ridiculous. So they had the ball around the 40 or 50. They needed to score a touchdown. Field goal doesn't matter, but it's fourth down territory. And then James Harrison and Van Noy rush in, cause a fumble. They jump on it. They get the ball at like the 50. Now it's like, I don't know, fourth and 20 something, or fourth and 19, I think it was.
Third and 19, then fourth and 15.
Okay, so third and 19, they get a little thing over the middle, then now it's fourth down, and they toss up a ball to a receiver who looks open, and Stephon Gilmore makes the play of the game, arguably.
Play of his season.
Definitely play of his season. Picture perfect, running down the field, doesn't lay a hand on the guy, literally puts his left hand behind his back, jumps up, swats the ball with his right.
Yeah, cleanest play you could have.
And they were bitching about that too, Boye.
I know. I'd have to watch before and see if he was grabbing him or anything beforehand. But yeah, when he makes the play on the ball, he's not touching him at all.
He's not touching him at all. So Boye was saying, how can they call down? They call me. It's like, well, he didn't touch the guy when the ball was in the air. That's a big one. that's the biggest one there.
I know, right? And when you watch the play, Romo pointed this out too, was they had a guy who ran up and turned around at the sticks. And Devin McCourty drove on that, and they ran this other receiver behind him.
Mm-hmm.
So they were reading Devin McCourty all the way. And it's a testament to what they thought of Blake Bortles, that knowing a touchdown would beat us, they were willing to sacrifice the coverage over the top to defend the third down line, or the first down line.
Yeah.
They were able to go, oh, well, I don't think Bortles is going to beat us over the head, so.
He can't throw it that far.
Go for it.
And
you
couldn't
have a step on the guy. No, he can throw it that far. He just can't do it accurately.
No, that's right.
That was actually a decent throw. I thought Gilmore made a really good play.
If he let him, if he got, I don't know. I mean, I would think if he got a little higher.
I thought it was great coverage.
Yeah,
it was just great coverage.
Great coverage, and yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. So they go 4 and out. Now we have the ball. Still, game's not over because they have timeouts. We need to get a first down. They stopped us twice, and then on third down we ran for the first down. Was that what it was?
Yeah, exactly. Deion Lewis went backwards, and then we got back into a 3rd and 9 situation. Deion goes around the left end.
They had essentially given up.
Possible holding on Dwayne Allen. Possible.
Yeah.
If you watch that play, it's darn close.
Yeah.
And it's right at the point of attack, too.
Really?
So it's an important one, yeah. That one definitely could have gone away. I was surprised that they didn't try to throw the ball. I really thought they would.
But they
just had no faith. I think the Jaguars probably had less faith in Blake Bortles than the Patriots did, but they had next to none.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and then you saw no reaction from Bill Belichick the entire game, and then as soon as we got that first down, he went nuts.
Yeah, he was ecstatic. He was like, holy shit, we did it.
We did it, yeah. So, absolutely crazy up and down game. Brady just Tom Brady'd it when he needed to, which was awesome.
No ill effects from any hand injury.
No, hand didn't seem to affect anything.
Outstanding. Accuracy was spot on the whole time.
Velocity on the ball was as normal. He went 26 of 38, 290 yards, two touchdowns. Non-existent running game there.
No, no. Yeah, we couldn't get anything going.
And it's just, you know, that's the Patriots. That seems like that's been the Patriots' MO the last several years. Big games, we'll go down, but we're going to fight you to the end, and we're going to make you make those mistakes. And you're going to make them because that's what they do. And, you know, I even heard Vrabel talking about it when he got hired. So he's the Tennessee coach. And he's sitting there, and they're asking him what he learned from Cowher when he played from Cowher, what he learned from Bill Belichick. And one of the things he said he learned from Belichick, he goes, making the other team make those mistakes. You playing sound football and making the other team making mistakes. And that's what happened. We waited for them. We kept coming. We kept coming. We kept coming. And we watched them make mistake after mistake after mistake until we won. And that was pretty much what happened last Super Bowl, too. So pretty hilarious.
Yeah, that's a solid plan. I was just thinking, how many mistakes did they really make? And there were some big penalties, and we mentioned a bunch of them. But it was just their failure to make plays in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
They had a sack, I think, in the fourth quarter. We must have thrown the ball 15, 20 times in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, Brady threw for like 140 yards or something. Yeah, exactly. It was like almost most of his yards was in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, absolutely. And they didn't get that much pressure there. They weren't making plays on the ball, and offensively, they just were incapable of picking up chunk yardage.
Yeah.
In the fourth quarter, it was like they just didn't make enough plays. Right. We just kept making plays. It's like we condensed a full game's worth of plays into two drives.
It was ridiculous.
Right when we had to have it. Humongous. The thing that I was left with, well, first of all, this game reminds me so much of the Super Bowl against the Seahawks. Just yeah. Without the comeback by, you know, Russell Wilson at the very end, the Malcolm Butler play. I think it might even be the same score. No, was that 28-24? Might have been 28-24. But just the way we were down 10 in the fourth quarter, we had to get everything offensively, and we got it every time we needed it.
Exactly.
Reminded me of that. And, you know, I was thinking, where does this team... I know the season's not over yet. Luckily, they're going to the Super Bowl again, so we're going to learn more about this team. But where does it rank amongst other Patriots teams right now? And I got it like sixth.
Yeah, and it's not high.
Yeah, well, when you have been to the Super Bowl eight times.
Yeah.
Brady has been to the Super Bowl eight times.
Yeah, it's definitely better than 2011.
No other quarterback has been more than four times.
Right.
That's the most.
I mean, most franchises.
No, John Elway went five times.
Most franchises. I think the number two franchises is the Cowboys with eight Super Bowls or nine.
Super Bowl appearances, yeah.
Yeah. Brady as a player has as much as any organization.
Yeah, any other organization, yeah.
It's insane. I mean, yeah. You're looking at all these stats, it's like they're going. So Brady's gone to about half. He's got a 45% chance of going to the Super Bowl if he plays a season.
No. He's got a 50% chance.
50%. I'm sorry. If he 50%, plays. If he plays.
Yeah, because you got to take out his injured 09 season.
Right.
No, 08 season and his rookie year
right.
when he didn't play.
So if he's playing, he's got a 1 out of 2 chance of going to the Super Bowl. There's some crazy stat I heard. I don't know the exact number, but it's like Bill Belichick has been a part or on the sideline for like 1 out of every 4 Super Bowls or something.
Ever?
Ever.
Yeah, I guess he went to 2 with the Giants, 1 with the Patriots.
And whatever he was in the 70s.
Yo, yeah, I didn't even think about the... Well, he was on with the Lions. Broncos? He was with the Broncos for a year. He might have...
So it's something like... somewhere in the 20% range, 20-25% range.
Well, he spent 9 with the Patriots.
Yeah, it's insane.
9. So what I was going to say was, like, where does this... Because I definitely have, you know, the 07 team. I have last year's team ahead of this one, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, definitely. And 2014.
2014 for sure ahead of this team. 2004 without a doubt.
Absolutely.
2014 was loaded. That's going to come up a lot, and I've already heard people talking about it because, you know, Patriots Eagles is a rematch of that.
Yeah.
That team was
stacked.
So dominant. I was going through the defensive players on that team.
It's a joke.
my mind was melting. You talk about Vince Wilfork, Ty Warren, Richard Seymour, Mike Vrabel, Teddy Bruschi. Every single position was like a dominant. Their cornerbacks were Asante Samuel and Ty Law. I know some of them got injured during the year. Rodney Harrison, Eugene Wilson, Ted Johnson, Roman Pfeiffer, Roosevelt Colvin.
Yeah. It's a joke. It's like every stats, like every
Willie
part
McGinnis.
Of and I mean, some of that has to go with like how much has the league gone down that team was that, I mean, that it was still a close game in the Super Bowl back then. And they were so dominant that year.
They were. That was a really good Eagles team.
That's what I mean. And this year, it's like, you know, we got a Nick Foles in the quarterback, but we'll get to that when we get to that. But yeah,
this year's Eagles team is very good too.
They are not as good though. If they were completely healthy, maybe. But yes. Yeah, I mean, the one thing that pisses me off that I keep hearing is the penalties. As I brought up, everyone's talking about the penalties. Oh well, the Patriots were flagged once. The Jacksonville was only was flagged six times. Look at that ratio, and it's like, you know what? It's clearly obvious that the refs are trying to let these guys play. They are really not trying to call a lot. And they haven't. They've been calling way less penalties all playoffs. They don't want penalties to be a thing. The NFL hates the Patriots. They're not going to call anything in their favor. They want them to fucking lose at all costs. They don't want them to win the Super Bowl for God's sake. And it's like, you know, at some point you got to realize that, yeah, the only ones they're calling are blatant penalties. And the fucking Jags penalties were all atrocious. Like, outside of, I mean, the one that's arguable is the one down the sideline with Cooks on Boye. That's maybe arguably, but I don't think
that one's arguable.
I don't think it is either.
I think maybe they might have missed a couple calls against the Patriots.
Yeah.
And they probably missed calls the other way, too.
They probably did. And if anyone says they favor Brady, you know what? He's been in the league for 18 years. The guy's won eight, is going to his eighth fucking Super Bowl. If it's human nature for them to be like, wow, this guy's fucking kicking ass, like, meh. I'm not going to call that one. You know what? He's deserved that at this point. He's literally like worked his way up to that point where, yeah, you know what? They might do that. And that's what you get for winning fucking five Super Bowls. You know, you get a little, they're going to be a little biased. Whatever.
Yeah, it's not like he's out there committing penalties.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know what
they'll protect him when people hit him.
Yeah.
As well, every quarterback should be protected. But yeah, just looking at the numbers and going, oh, eight penalties versus one or whatever it was, that's you can take one step further and think, how many penalties did they actually commit versus how many were called? And
right.
is the underlying assumption that they committed the same amount of penalties? Because were we watching the same game?
Yeah.
Patriots did not get a delay a game. Is that one of your things?
They weren't tackling and bear hugging receivers downfield.
Yeah, so it's so lazy.
And everyone's saying, oh, well, the Patriots, their total came way down. Yeah, everyone's total came way down. They're not fucking calling penalties.
Yeah.
They're trying not to call them.
Get with the program, yeah, people.
Exactly. So, absolutely insane game.
Just another thing to
add to Brady's legend.
Add to Brady's legacy, and people. I love when you think about like Joe Flacco's crazy season.
Yeah.
That playoff run, and he doesn't have any games like this on his resume.
None.
Or like
I don't know if there's another team in sports where they're down when the clock's ticking out and you're literally running out of time. You're in the less than the last quarter of the game and they're down and you go, "Yep, the Patriots, they're going to win." It's not even, "Oh, they have a chance." No. If they get the ball in a right sequence here, they're winning.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ever going to happen again in sports. I don't know.
What I was trying to say was a game like this is a defining moment for any player, not named Tom Brady. Legitimately, it's just a defining moment against the number one defense in the league, down 10 points in the fourth quarter, missing your top two favorite targets, whatever it is.
Yeah, without Edelman, without Gronk.
And you got a freak injury to your hand a couple days before, and the whole thing, and it's just another chapter.
Yeah.
There's so many of these. It's outrageous.
Just another playoff game.
Can't even grasp it. Some of the other things I learned in this game, Trey Flowers is a legitimate star.
Yeah.
He is incredibly underrated. I think next year everybody in the league is going to know his name because he's going to be coming in the final year of his contract, of his rookie deal. If he doesn't sign an extension, which I would love if he does.
Yeah.
But if we're going into a game and you let me choose between Trey Flowers and Michael Bennett, I'm taking Trey Flowers. That's really? How good he is. That's how good he is. He's a freak.
I mean, it's pretty much at this point, our, like you said, the defense was doing nothing through three quarters. He was the one that's like kind of started it.
He's the only very good player in that front seven.
Started making great plays, and then the whole defense followed.
Yeah. The only other person I would even think about putting up there with him is Malcolm Brown as like above average.
Yeah.
There's a lot of average players in that front seven.
Oh, absolutely.
Trey Flowers is a star. He's somehow able to still make plays with all the attention he must get.
Just compare the defensive line and linebackers of the 04 team to this team.
I just tried to name all of
them. Yeah. Trey Flowers is maybe the only one that would start on that. I don't even know if he'd start on that team.
He'd get time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But nobody else would.
No.
Malcolm Brown's not seeing the field. I can guarantee you that. Kyle Van Noy is not stepping on the field once.
Roberts wouldn't even be. He'd be a practice squad player.
No way. He'd cut. So, yeah, Trey Flowers is amazing. James White still cannot break tackles. It's really frustrating. That's why I thought we should go more to Burkhead. I think he barely played. But James White had a fine game. But you lay an arm on him and he's on the ground. Most of the time.
Well, this year he hasn't been beating. Last year he was beating the first guy.
Last year he did a lot.
This year, I don't know if he's because he's still hurt or something, but yeah, he's not him. He's not what he was last year for whatever reason.
Yeah, he's not all the way back. And Deion Lewis was like really contained in this game. They got to figure out a way to get him more open next week. The other things how about the frickin' offensive line? We didn't even bring it up. Cameron Fleming is our number three tackle.
Yeah, he played great.
He played fantastic. Offensive line played fine against one of the best fronts in the league.
Yep.
Throughout the game, early it looked like Brady was a little bit hesitant. I remember that play where he dropped back and then his eye level came down. And he was looking left, looking right, looking left, looking right, and then he took a sack.
Yeah.
Sat down.
Mm-hmm.
That was really the only play that I can think of where he didn't look comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
They played excellent.
Really, really well, yeah.
The last thing that I wanted to bring up about this game was it was actually from the first drive. We get into field goal range, 4th and 2 from the 30-yard line, and we go for it.
Yeah.
What does that mean? And the more I think about it, the more I'm remembering that the Jaguars are a play from ahead team.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it against the Steelers. You can look back at most of their wins from the season. They got an early lead, and they were able to clamp down on defense, run the ball on offense, play mistake-free from the quarterback position. And so I think that the Patriots not only wanted to get a lead early, but they wanted to get a big lead early. So they were like, I don't want to go up 3-0. I want to go up 7-0.
Right.
Or 10-0. Or 14-0, whatever it was going to be.
And make them claw their way back because you know they're not going to do it.
I think that's the way they wanted to play, and it didn't work out that way.
No, nothing went our way for the first half.
They were willing to be very aggressive about it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that probably wasn't the only design on that play to kind of throw up a wheel route to Amendola. I bet there were reads. I bet they were trying to hit like Hogan on a sit-down route in front of it or something because that's a risky play.
Yeah.
That's not a high percentage throw.
No, but what a great throw.
Even though they made it look great.
And that was the best part about it, too, is that everyone was still, is Brady's hand, how's it doing? And then after he delivered that, we're like, he's fine. Like, he is throwing just fine.
Yeah, he's
good. So here we are, Super Bowl 52.
52, yeah, the Ted Johnson Super Bowl. So, yeah, the Pats are going for a rematch against the Eagles. The Eagles absolutely dominated the Vikings. I thought that game really came down to, like, 4 or 5 big plays, and then the Vikings collapsed.
Yeah. That's what it was.
There was the interception return for a touchdown from Patrick Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the sack fumble by Case Keenum fumbled when they were driving in for a touchdown at the end of the first half.
Yep.
And then like immediately after that, Nick Foles hits Alshon Jeffrey for wide a touchdown.
Open. He was
wide open.
Wide open. There was no one even near him.
Was it Terrence Newman? Did he stop running or trip or something?
Yeah, he stopped. They had They had 3 40-plus-yard touchdowns.
Yeah,
3.
So Torrey Smith had one on a flea flicker. There was just like a couple plays, and part of you wonders, you know, if they clean that up.
What kind of game was it?
If there wasn't an interception for a touchdown, if you actually scored points, you know, if Adam Thielen pulls in that circus catch in the end zone on that 4th down,
mm-hmm.
You know, if they don't give up those gigantic touchdown plays, and you're like, oh, this was actually a really close game. But obviously they made all those plays.
Right.
But I feel like that's got to be a huge focus for the Pats is how do we limit these giant plays? How do we minimize our mistakes? Well, and how do we not allow them to convert these 60-yard touchdowns?
Yeah, and that's not hard to do. I mean, when we started watching the game, obviously ended up being the Eagles blew them out. But within the first 10 or 20, 15 minutes, basically the first quarter of the game, it pretty much looked like it was going to be Minnesota's game to lose.
Yeah, well, they got the opening touchdown.
They got the opening touchdown, and they stifled that Eagles offense two or three times. And then while it was still close, he threw the pick, and that was that. Once he threw that pick six, I feel like that was kind of done, unfortunately for him. But
you know. That it was still, what was it, a 14-7 game when they were driving at the end of the first half, right?
Yeah, but then it was they were in his head. He was out. Case was out.
He could have absolutely, they could have tied it up right before halftime, right?
He could have.
And then, yeah. And so the pick six was before that. I don't think it was over by any means at that point.
Well, I'm not saying the game was over. I'm saying Case Keenum was done.
Oh.
Case Keenum had nothing left in the tank. And you know, that it was surprising, but I mean, it's a tough place to go play in Philly. Those fans are psychotic, as everyone knows, after they won the game and pretty much burnt the whole city to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the Eagles are a really good team. I'm just not overly worried. I mean, I wasn't overly worried about Jacksonville. All of our Super Bowls have come down to the last fucking play within 3 points. We're 5-point favorites at the moment. So, yeah.
I'm terrified. Absolutely terrified. This team is stacked. If you put Carson, that's what one of the things I was thinking about is what would this matchup look like if everyone was healthy?
Oh, it'd be ridiculous.
This would be one of the best matchups ever. Talk about Carson Wentz, who, if he continued to play the way he was, probably would have been the MVP.
Probably.
They probably would have gone 14-2. Everyone likes a new face. He was playing great.
Mm-hmm. They would have given him over Brady if he kept playing that way.
Yeah, and especially with the way Brady finished in December wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're talking about Jason Peters, a Hall of Fame left tackle who they're missing.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Hicks, who's one of their other linebackers, Darren Sproles, electric punt returner, third down guy. And then on the Patriots side, Edelman, Hightower, Gronkowski, we're kind of assuming that he's going to be healthy, but is he?
I think he'll be all right. Yeah, but yeah.
Martellus Bennett would be on the field. Are you kidding?
I know,
we could trot out Edelman, Amendola, Hogan, Brandon Cooks, Gronkowski, Martellus Bennett, Deion Lewis. Those are our skill players.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. With Marcus Cannon at right tackle, Solder at left, and they have like almost a similar roster. They have tons of weapons all over the place. Zach Ertz is great. Torrey Smith has wheels. Alshon Jeffrey's a legit number one. They got backup. Their backfield has depth. Their offensive line, Jason Peters and Lane Johnson, one of the best tackle duos in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Kelce is a perennial Pro Bowler practically at center.
Well,
and their defense is stacked. It would be an amazing matchup if both teams were healthy.
Too bad.
And even with some of the injuries, I still think it's a really good matchup.
Oh,
these are the two best teams in football all season.
They were. Two number one seeds again in the Super Bowl. Second time in a row. Maybe third time in a row. Denver versus Carolina. I think this is like 4 years now going.
We were the number one seed.
Seattle was number one.
Was Seattle the one seed?
I think so.
Yeah, because they hosted the Packers.
Yeah, so Seattle and us. Then Denver and Carolina were both number one seeds.
I want to say Denver and Seattle in 2013 were both one seeds. Denver certainly was.
I don't think Seattle was.
They weren't. They were a great team that year.
Maybe they were. You're right. Maybe they were because I think there was a stat that I read that the last time a road team got to the Super Bowl was the Baltimore versus Niners.
Right, because Baltimore was 2012. Beat the Pats in New England.
Right. So, yeah, that you're right. I mean, it could be several years now. So we're going to talk a lot more about
Seattle
this.
Seattle was the one seed in 2013.
Wow. So, yeah, we're going to talk a lot more about this matchup next week.
Yep.
Sean's scared. Obviously, I'm not as scared.
I hope you talk me off the ledge, and maybe I'll talk you closer to it.
Yeah. they have a vicious front seven.
They do. And
vicious.
The thing that extra scares me about their front seven is the depth.
Yeah.
We talked so much on this podcast about the way the Patriots are able to wear people out. But when you got seven defensive linemen who are all starting caliber,
8.
It's going to be way harder. They have 8.
They have, like, I think they take out 4 and put in 4.
That's craziness. Jim Schwartz is just playing chess. He's doing whatever he wants. And by the way, how does he not have a head coaching job? Who are these Jamokes who are getting jobs over Jim Schwartz?
The guy that got a job in Arizona.
It's like, I bet Schwartz didn't even want that job. I wouldn't want that job.
No?
I mean, obviously, I would want that job. But, yeah. But, yeah, it's not the best one.
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah. Mike Vrabel got one.
I know, Vrabel got one. And Jim Schwartz has head coaching experience. He's the best defensive coach available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Boggles my mind. But, yeah, 4-4. So, yeah, so they got, like, Fletcher Cox, Bo Allen, Timmy Jernigan, some other guy, I can't remember his name, another D tackle. But then on the edge,
Brandon Graham. Oh, yeah. No,
on the edge, Brandon Graham, Vinnie Curry, Chris Long, and I'm missing somebody on the edge. But yeah, they're loaded. Loaded.
Yeah. Scary. Pretty impressive.
That's why I'm scared.
Yeah, but I'm not too scared on the back end besides Malcolm Jenkins. But we're going to go over all that next week.
Yes, we will. All right. Thank you guys for listening. Please enjoy the magic that is this Patriots victory.
Because you're never going to see this shit again.
Yeah, you might see it in a couple weeks.
Yeah, but we'll years to come.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a long time. You're never going to see. Probably not going to happen in New England, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you're not going to see fourth quarter comebacks happening in every playoffs, winning Super Bowls like this. It's not going to happen.
Double digit against top defenses.
I mean, I think Brady now has the most comebacks. And it's got to be in the AFC in the championship games and the Super Bowls. He's got the biggest deficit or coming back deficits, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
It's never happened before.
He's closing in on 10,000 passing yards in the playoffs.
Yeah. He's got.
That's two MVP caliber seasons.
Yeah. They were saying today that he has 50 less yards in the postseason than Foles has in his career.
Oh, good.
50 less.
Guy's 40 and he looks incredible.
Yep.
No, just no signs of any wear and tear.
Also, tune in soon. I think it's February 1st it airs. ESPN's 30 for 30, Bill versus Bill. I heard it's unbelievable.
Oh, the two Bills.
I don't think
it's that adversarial.
Yeah, right. No, but I heard Zoe talk about it today. He got a media copy and watched it. He said that, you know, all that stuff that happened with that report and the Patriots and how they're, you know, they're the three people, you know, Kraft and Belichick and Brady are all each other's throats or whatever. He goes, watch that documentary, and that's going to make you piss your pants laughing about that report.
Oh, okay.
Because it is nothing compared to what they did to each other, or they were like, and they were brutal to each other. So it's going to be great.
Oh, I love Parcells. He's the funniest dude.
Such a straight shooter. It's unbelievable.
The Big Tuna. How do you get that nickname? Yeah. One of the funniest nicknames out there.
Of all time, absolutely.
The Big Tuna.
Unbelievable. Right.
And on that note, we will let you guys go. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the weekend off.
Adios.
See ya.